Hey guys, welcome to the MC Anime Podcast.
We cover anime, geek culture, Japanese aesthetics, and Asian studies. We are a multi-fandom podcast, and you can expect to hear topics in your favorite hobby or fandom activity potentially. You can find MC Anime on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, please check out mcanimepodcast.com, our website. Furthermore, stay tuned in for another episode.
Alright guys, welcome to another episode of the NC Anime Podcast, NC Uday, and I have a special guest with me today, Michael Higgin. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, and it's actually pronounced Higginson, but that's okay.
Yeah.
How
are you doing today?
I'm doing well, and you? It is, I will say that it is a little bit cold out here in Victorville, where I live. It is, a whole 61 degrees outside. So what do you do?
I'm just here. We're going to have a nice conversation about our topic today. Tell the audience a little about yourself, what you do, and where they can find you.
Okay. Well, I am blind. I've been blind my entire life. And I do a few things. I am a full-time public speaker, a keynote speaker, and that has been the case ever since escaping from the World Trade Center on September 11th, 2001. I also work with a company called Accessibe, A-C-C-E-S-S-I, capital B-E. And Accessibe is a company that makes products to help make the internet more inclusive and available for people with a variety of different kinds of disabilities. We can certainly talk about that. And I also am an author. I've written 3 books. The first one was Thunderdog, the story of a blind man, his guide dog, and the triumph of trust at Ground Zero, which was a #1 New York Times bestseller. Running with Roselle, which is a children's book, although more adults buy it than children. It's more about me growing up and Roselle growing up, and Roselle was the dog who was with me in the World Trade Center. A little bit about September 11th, but it's mainly about us growing up. And then the third one was published just earlier this year. It's called Live Like a Guide Dog, 2 stories from a blind man and his dogs about being brave, overcoming adversity, and moving forward in faith. And the intent and the overall direction of that book is to teach people how they can learn to control fear and not let fear overwhelm or, as I put it, blind you, especially when you have emergencies and other unexpected things that happen. So those are the things that I do.
All right. Where can they find you if they want to have any correspondence with you?
A couple ways. The easiest way is go to michaelhingson.com. That's michaelhingson.com. By the way, I also do a podcast called Unstoppable Mindset, where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. And I'm sure we're going to get into that, but it's worded that way because typically diversity people don't talk about disabilities. So I put inclusion first because, from my position as a podcaster, if you don't include disabilities, then you're not inclusive. Anyway, they can also go to michaelhingson.com/podcast. Or they can just send me an email to speaker, A-E-R, at michaelhingson.com. And again, Michael Hingson is michaelhingson.com.
All right. Well, that's a little bit about Michael and his expertise and the different fields that he's done with Unstoppable Mindset, writing books about his personal experiences at Ground Zero and everything in between. Today's topic is going to be about navigating the internet, media support for the blind. So what is it like as a blind individual navigating the internet? We'll just get that out of the way.
Well, it is slowly getting better. So it used to be that I could go to any number of websites and, let me go back a little bit. The way I generally interact with a computer is using a device called a screen reader. I either use a screen reader, which is a software package that verbalizes whatever comes across the screen, or I can connect a braille display, a refreshable braille display, to my computer via Bluetooth or whatever. And a refreshable braille display is a device that has a row of braille characters available, 40 characters, or what are called braille cells. and I can interact with the computer that will transmit information to the device that I use. It's called a Braille Edge. It's now a little bit of an older device, and information will appear in Braille. But in either case, and Braille refreshable Braille displays, or the Braille displays where the dots can change as you go through and interact with the internet or whatever, or read a book or whatever, that is something that only relatively recently, in the last 10 years, have we really found that the technologies have been made to allow them to interact with computers. And that's typically done through the screen readers that I mentioned earlier, the software packages that verbalize what comes across the screen, but they'll also accept interacting with a Braille display. Well, going back, however, to your question, years ago, I could go to any number of websites, and when I went to them, let's say with my screen reader, which would verbalize whatever came across the screen, literally I would hear nothing, because the websites were graphic. There was nothing to give me any information about what was on the webpage. The Americans with Disabilities Act came along, and it said that places of business and places of business needed to be accessible for people with disabilities. Unfortunately, they didn't codify it as well as they should, because any number of websites that one might go to are not accessible. And sometimes you could get, if you were a website owner or a lawyer, who would come along and say, well, the internet didn't come along until after the ADA, so the ADA doesn't really have any influence on the internet, which isn't true. The Department of Justice has now said it does. That is to say, the internet is a place of business, and so things have to be accessible. But even today, interacting with the web is a significant challenge, because most websites are not accessible or haven't done what they need to do to make sure that their content is accessible. So I can go to any number of websites and I can scroll down the page and I'll hear things like link, 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 but they don't say what the links are, because the website coders don't know or won't, unless they get paid a whole lot more money, make websites accessible. They mostly don't know how to do it, because computer coding programs, that is schools, don't, training institutions don't teach accessibility to a large degree. So interacting with the internet can be a real challenge. We estimate that only about 3% of all websites really make the effort to make themselves inclusive or accessible for people with a variety of disabilities. Of course, I, as a blind person, need to be able to hear that a link is a Facebook link or an X link or an Instagram link. I need to be able to hear descriptions of pictures on the websites. And if people don't think I need that information because it's only a picture after all, why do you have a picture on the website in the first place? You're providing information through that picture, and that information does need to be made available to me. Now, there is an organization called the World Wide Web Consortium that has created something called Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. And the WCAG is actually a means that describes how to make and what to do to make an internet website available and accessible. But the problem is, again, most people don't really use it, which is very frustrating. And it isn't just for blind people. Let's say you're a person who happens to have epilepsy. If you go to a website with elements that blink, that could throw you into having a seizure. And you need to be able to disable the blinking elements. Or let's say you are deaf or hard of hearing, you need to be able to have videos that are captioned. I, as a blind person, need the videos described. Well, about 25% of all people have some sort of disability, according to the Center for Disease Control. And the reality is that only about 3% of all websites really address that issue. Companies like Accessibility are making a big difference in that. Accessibility works to make a number of different kinds of disabilities more available to the internet, or the internet available to more people with a variety of different kinds of disabilities. But the reality is that we have a long way to go. And in the meanwhile, we just either have to muddle through or we plain don't use websites that aren't accessible. And what we generally tend to do is to stay loyal to the websites that really take the time to make themselves, or where the website owners take the time to make the websites accessible.
So navigating the internet is more like a means of self-identifying which websites are more accessible to you based on the programming, based on the coding, and the aspects in which to make it accessible under the ADA. Not to mention that maybe some of them are not ADA compliant. And
most of them,
getting them ADA compliant is the issue that can be addressed in the pre-coding or after the code launch.
So there are two ways that you can make a website accessible, and you've described them. The main one that people are used to is when a website is created or after the fact, a programmer comes along who is hired to put in all the coding to make that website accessible or inclusive. Now, that works well as long as they know what they're doing. But the problem is that websites are generally dynamic. Shopping websites, news websites, all sorts of websites are dynamic. That is to say, they're constantly changing, which means that someone has to constantly reprogram or fix the coding on the website with additions and changes that occur to make sure that those additions and changes are accessible also. The other way to make a website accessible is what a company like Accessibe does in part. Accessibe has a product called an Access Widget. The widget sits up in the cloud somewhere, and if somebody subscribes to the internet, well, to Accessibe, and the price is like $500, $490 a year for the simplest version of the widget and the technologies that are available. But when they subscribe, the widget looks at their website and it figures out what it can do to make the website more accessible. The widget does a lot. It doesn't do everything because it doesn't really know how to totally accurately describe pictures. It doesn't know all that it will in the future about dealing with graphs and diagrams and other things like that. But it's getting better every day because of artificial intelligence, if you will. But meanwhile, what the widget does is it analyzes the website and it says, okay, I can make this accessible. I can't make this accessible, but I can tell you about it. I can make that accessible. So it can decide what it can make accessible. And the way it works is when I go to the website as a blind person, the very first thing I hear at the top of the screen is put your web browser in a screen reader mode button. And if I push that button, what happens is that because the website owner has subscribed to Accessibe, pushing that button sends a signal, a command to the widget up in the cloud, and the widget transmits down to my browser as the user all the codes and the information necessary that it can make available to make that website accessible. My browser doesn't care where the code comes from, whether it comes from initial programming that somebody does, or whether it comes from the browser. Either way, with the browser, I can get that code. And the advantage of the browser is that as a website owner makes changes to their website, what happens is that the browser, the widget rather, looks at those changes as they come along, and it fixes what it can to make whatever changes you've made accessible. Again, there are things that the widget doesn't necessarily do. What Accessibe has now done is instituted programs to enhance what the browser does with the widget through a program called, for example, Access Flow, which is a system where Accessibe can actually do a much more detailed analysis of a website, and it can tell a coder exactly what to do and where to do it to make any inaccessible thing accessible, or Accessibe can contract to do that. But the point is that it's an augmentation to the browser, and it costs more money, but it is an augmentation that addresses the things that the browser won't do. Is the browser ever going to be perfect? Well, maybe, AI is a thing that is constantly evolving, but I don't expect it's going to be that totally perfect in the relatively near future. So things like access flow are always going to be necessary, but it still makes for a whole lot better website. I've used it on many sites. I have it on my website. I have the widget on my website or associated with my website, and it makes a significant difference in making the website accessible.
Well, now you're talking about websites being accessible. What is the impact of social media with constantly posting videos, images, posts? I know posts might be able to see because it constantly updates, but not necessarily the audio description that would fit into a video or image.
Well, but again, when you're doing posts, if you put graphics in that post and other things, then they're going to be as inaccessible as ever. The issue is that the bottom line is that in reality, it is possible to make websites and content inclusive and accessible. It may make people think about what they do a little bit differently. So, for example, if it's a video and I need it to be accessible, that means that there has to be an audio description of the video as it's playing. That can either be something that can be done through artificial intelligence, although that's got a ways to go, or somebody can look at the video and create a script and record on a separate track a description that goes along with the video so that as it's playing, I, as a blind person, can also hear what it is that is happening on the video and get it described. But the bottom line is, with all of that, websites are, and content in general, does need to be made accessible. Social media is working at it. Some Facebook is making some things available. They're doing some things to describe pictures, but they're not perfect yet by any means. But people tend not to focus a lot on making things accessible. They're so used to pictures. You know, the reality is that the number of blind people compared to society is pretty small. It doesn't change the fact that there is a group of people who are out there that are not going to look at the web the same way most sighted people do. And so we need to get that information made available. But most people tend not to pay a whole lot of attention to it, and so it doesn't get done. But it needs to get done.
So navigating social media is a hurdle that will definitely be a challenge through different means as the technology advances to allow automation in that area.
Sure. As social media progresses, as technology develops to create better ways of making things accessible, they will get plugged into social media and we'll see things get better over time by any standard you wish.
Okay. And in, you bring up Braille for 1-2 type of devices. With the Braille display's function in navigation, what is the impact for blind internet users while using that function?
I'm sorry, ask that one more time.
You brought up Braille, the display function in web navigation. What is the impact that will have on blind people as an internet user consuming that function and that navigation?
There's a couple of parallel things that go on here. One of the things that we're seeing, I mentioned the Braille displays before. One of the things that we're starting to see are full-page Braille displays that are capable of displaying not only text, but graphics, although it still may not be quite as well-defined as graphics for a sighted person, but they're getting better. But the point is that these displays will display graphics. And that is one of the things that I think will be exciting over time as these displays become more available and they come down in cost. You'll see more blind people actually using refreshable Braille displays because they will display graphics. But the advantage of using Braille is the same as the advantage for a sighted person. You can read quietly. You don't need to have something talking to you. And likewise, by having it in Braille, it also means that I get to see how people spell what they do. That's one of the main important points about Braille. Braille is the only means by which I have for truly being able to read and write. And Braille is a learning tool that is as important to me as print is for any sighted person. And so having Braille is an important thing. And over time, we're going to see Braille probably used more, especially, as I said, as these larger, more sophisticated Braille displays come into existence and the cost goes down over time.
Okay. So with that being said, as technology advances with Braille and having displays portraying them, then it's going to be a better system overall.
I think so. It's going to take a while, but it's coming.
True. So what is the of all text for imaging, and how does it benefit in knowing the text on the image associated with that pose, with that graphic?
Well, all text and arias and such things as that are the things that the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines utilize and deal with to make websites more available. So, for example, I mentioned before, I can go to some websites and all I hear is link, link, link. Alt text would be the text that you may not see as a sighted person, but that my screen reader will hear and it will tell me that's a Facebook link or an X link or a LinkedIn link or an Instagram link. The alt text is the information that describes one thing or another. And it is the very thing that needs to be added into the mix to ensure that I have the accessibility that I need to interact with the web.
And is all text also coded into your email as well? That way you know which type of link you're getting or specific things in there?
Well, it can be an issue, but it's only there if people put it in. Like, so as the user, I'm not the one that deals with all text. That has to come from the creator. But typically in emails, if I'm just listening to an email or reading an email, then I can hear all the text. But then when it comes to having it in HTML code and you get links, if the links aren't labeled, that can be an issue.
Okay. So, for instance, someone signed off with a website, but they didn't say what the website was. Then you had no context to know what that website is without all text saying the link it is.
Well, okay. If I hear www.mc... anime.com, I can hear that. But if all I have is a link and you show the information about what the website is in the graphic, I won't hear it. So if you type all that information out, yeah, I'll hear it.
If you write the full URL, it would tell you mostly how it is spelled.
It would tell me exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you do have reference to like a full link and stated in the email. So if it's hyperlinked, it doesn't matter because it's going to read the entire text of that.
If the text is there, it'll read it.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. And then once you have access to that type of link and the search navigation, how do you navigate that in addition to checkout content?
How do I navigate the search? Well, the same way anyone else does. So search is typically in most cases, it's labeled in a way that a blind person can read it. But it is possible that there's a form that doesn't have a label, in which case I won't necessarily know it's a search box. There still has to be something that labels it in a way that my screen reader will know what it is and verbalize it. So if you just have a box where somebody can type something in, but the only way you know it's a search box is a graphic around it, I won't hear that. If, on the other hand, you properly label the box as a search box or whatever, then I'll hear it and I will know and can operate accordingly.
Okay. That goes back to the programming and the coding for it. What the trend set instructions specific to your demographic.
Right. Whether it is done manually ahead of time, if you will, or a product like Accessibility does it, if the information is made available, then I can get to it. So, for example, on my website, there is a series of 8 links or eight things at the top of the website, mainly in the headline, the main things that you can click on. One of them is called bio. What it is actually a link with a little drop down arrow, which indicates that it's a menu and not just a link. But the person who coded it didn't code it properly. And so as a result, when I go over it without activating Accessibility, I hear bio pop-up link. And if I click it, which I do by pressing enter on my keyboard because I don't use a mouse, then it will go in and it'll display Michael Hingson's bio. But that's all it'll display. If, on the other hand, I activate Accessibility and I then go down to that link, what I hear is menu. I hear bio menu. And when I hit enter on that menu, a whole menu of different kinds of options come up, which is the same thing that you would see if you right-clicked with a mouse or left-clicked, depending on what it requires. But the point is that Accessibility is what made it be a real menu option for me. And that's important.
Okay. So let's say accessing a call feature. How does that differentiate from a traditional website that have that all text and language coded in?
Well, when you say call feature, give me a little bit better understanding of what you mean.
If you have a conference call on some platform, how does that navigation be different than a regular website?
It's HTML code. HTML code is HTML code, right? So it's all a question of whether people properly label and properly do the things with the HTML code.
All right, so a platform like Zoom for video conferences and work rooms and all that stuff is coded in that way you can navigate pretty well?
If they do the work to make it accessible, yes. Now, when the pandemic started, Zoom put together a whole accessibility team, and they interacted with like blind people very quickly. And anytime something was reported to Zoom that wasn't accessible, they fixed it right away. And they, I'm not sure that they've got the same level of team. I don't know. But the bottom line is that it's all in the HTML coding. It's not different. You know, we create these websites with HTML. We may use Java and other kinds of things. But what we ultimately get is what our browsers understand, which is HTML.
Okay.
And with HTML file, typically most people know about that format with podcasting. How does that HTML file, is that same, just like the same instruction?
Or HTML is HTML. It isn't a different language for different things. You may have to use, depending on what you're doing, different portions of it, but HTML is HTML.
Is it easier to navigate a podcast on HTML because it's already in that format than, say, like Spotify or Apple Podcasts?
Those also, though, tend to use the same languages. The problem is how much they actually pay attention to making them accessible. It doesn't matter who's doing the HTML coding. What matters is how much of what the Webcon Accessibility Guideline requires to make the website accessible, they incorporate into the website, right? So if whether it's a podcast, whether it's a call, whether it's just a straight website, whether it's a website with a lot of diagrams and pictures or whatever, it is still the same code. It's a question of how much somebody pays attention and makes that document and all the pages on that website accessible. It's the same process for any of those things. Spotify is a website just like Zoom is a website. And it's a question of how much they pay attention to making it accessible. Dropbox is the same thing. And there are things that Dropbox doesn't make as accessible as they should. And so as a result, sometimes we have a little bit more of a challenge in interacting with them. Spotify has made a number of what it does accessible. But again, you can find things that aren't accessible in any of them because people aren't necessarily doing as perfect a job as they should.
Okay. So what are the experiences that you found to be very meaningful while the technology rises for you to be able to navigate the internet with community support?
Well, the answer is anyone who takes the time to do the coding to or get the coding done, whether it's manually or later with Accessibe, and if Accessibe can do it, anyone who makes sure that they do what is necessary to make the website accessible, no matter what website it is, it'll work. And if they don't, then it won't.
Is there anything we haven't covered that you want to talk about now, to how this town will say it?
Well, let me give you an example with what you're talking about. I got contacted a couple of years ago by someone who went to a website called paintyourlife.com. Now, Paint Your Life is a website that allows you to upload a photo, let's say of a pet, and you can tell the people at Paint Your Life what you want them to do with that photo, like make my dog a statue, I want a bronze statue, or I want a watercolor or an oil painting. They do something to make whatever you want to honor your pet, for example. Well, somebody called me and said that when they went to Paint Your Life, which was an Accessibe website, they used Accessibe, and they tried to work the shopping cart, it didn't work. And they couldn't enter things into the shopping cart. So I reached out to Accessibe and said, we've got this problem. Here's what the difficulty is. And showed them that it didn't work properly. And what they did was they investigated and found that there was an issue with the shopping cart that was on that site, which I assume was a commercially available cart that you might find on other websites, but there was a problem with that cart such that it wasn't accessible. But Accessibe was able to modify their widget to be able to deal with that shopping cart. And when they fixed it, the person was able to go in and enter the things that they wanted to do and go forward. And so the reason I mention it is that since it's a commercially available shopping cart, anyone else, any other website owner that used that shopping cart on their website suddenly would find, if they knew to look, that the shopping cart problem was fixed on their website. Because when Accessibe fixes a problem in the widget, that solution automatically gets rolled out to every single person who subscribes to the widget. That's why the Access widget technology is very scalable. And it's important that it be scalable, because what it does is it makes it possible to truly have a better shot at having a wider range of different places that get fixed, simply because when you fix it in one place with Accessibe, you fix it in all places.
Oh, okay.
And the problem is with manual coding, that doesn't work. You got to do it website by website.
So having access to that widget, the scalability of it, and appealing to everyone than just one person is more beneficial because of the access that it has.
Yeah, it works across the board. My belief, this is my personal opinion, is every website coder in the world should have Accessibe as part of their tools. Why? As I said earlier, Accessibe does not necessarily make every single thing on a website accessible and inclusive. But if you're coding a website and you use Accessibe, it will make a lot of that website accessible right from the outset, which means you don't have to do it. So all you have to focus on are the things that Accessibe itself can't do, which saves you a lot of time. It doesn't necessarily mean that you need to change your pricing as a website coder. You're charging for your expertise, not your time. And the bottom line is that by using Accessibe, it makes your life a whole lot easier by any definition.
As we wrap this episode up in a closing argument, what is one thing in conclusion that you want the audience to know?
Anybody that has got a website needs to make it accessible. You should do it for the basic reason that when you make your website, it means that you're going to have people find that website and they're going to stay loyal to you. If you've got competition that doesn't make their website accessible, let's say blind people, for example, are going to come to your website because you took the time to make it accessible. You made sure that your website was available to everyone. And so for me personally, I'm very brand loyal, and most people are. The Nielsen company in 2016 did a study of brands, and they pointed out that people with disabilities are much more brand loyal when they go to websites that are accessible, because by doing so, by making your website accessible, you're making it easier for me to be able to shop online just like anyone else can do. And if that's the choice between going to a website that isn't very usable and a website that is much more usable, and you're selling the same products, I'm going to go every time to the website that's more usable. So everyone should be making their websites inclusive and accessible anyway. And that is a very important thing to do. So the bottom line is, do you really want to leave out of your sphere of influence up to 25% of all people who might go to the internet or not? And that's the kind of number that, as I said, the CDC points out, 25% of all people have some sort of disability. If I'm making a website, I want to make sure that every one of those people has as much access to the website as the rest of the world.
All right. Well, this is Michael Higson, and he is able to provide the insight that we need to know how to make blind not necessarily something that's not see, but able to see. And the use of the internet is the power that we have to transform that into a media that is meaningful, that is accessible, that is a scalable feature. And within that, we have one group of community not feel as bad when navigating the internet. So this concludes this episode about navigating the internet, media support for the blind. Michael, where can they find you for your correspondence? Because you've been very insightful in your conversation today.
Yeah, thank you. And again, they can go to www.michaelhingson.com. That's michaelhingson.com. And of course, I hope they'll also go to our podcast page, which is michaelhingson.com/podcast. Or they can email me, and my email address where they can reach me is speaker, at michaelhingson, michaelhingson.com. And as I said at the beginning, I've been a public speaker ever since September 11th. So if anyone is looking for a speaker to come and talk about these issues and tell the story of the World Trade Center and all that, love to hear from you. We are always looking to be hired to travel and speak wherever it's possible to do.
All right. Well, that concludes this interview. Thank you, Mike, for being here. You were lovely to have. Very insightful. And I changed with the time today.
Thank you for having us. I really appreciate it. This was fun.
All right. Bye, guys.
This concludes another episode of MC Anime Podcast. MC Anime Podcast is available on podcast directories like Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. We also have our website at mcanimepodcast.com. If you want to directly support us, then follow Patreon blog MC Anime. Finally, if you want services for hire, then we're available on Fiverr for audio and video production, graphic design, idea consulting, and blog and article writing.